Welcome to the BS Show presentation of Three and Out with attorney Jeff O'Brien and our very special guest, John Beasley. He was a tight end on the Vikings' first Super Bowl team after the 1969 season. But he's, you know, I don't know how much you made, John, playing football, but you've made a little bit more panning for gold, I guess is what you say. You've made quite a bit of money, according to Jeff, as a investing in gold mines.
Well, and it's not quite like panning like the old days.
I know.
We actually go underground and get the gold out. But, yeah, there's a considerable amount more money in gold than football back in those days.
Yeah, this is one of the cooler stories. That, you know, I've, over the years, representing some of the retired Vikings and knowing and being friends with some of the other ones, John included, whether it be in person or Facebook. I think we met on Facebook via Joe Kapp and Ed White. It's kind of funny how that happens these days.
Right, right.
And of all the stories that you hear about the old days with the Vikings and some of the crazy stories, this one might be the craziest, but it has probably the happiest ending. I mean, this is, you know, we talk so much, Bob, and about issues with athletes and bad investments, or, you know, you see all these stories in the news all the time of athletes suing their financial advisor, their agent, whomever, for getting them into bad investments. And when you hear the story of a bunch of football players invested in a gold mine, it sounds like it's going to go that way, and it absolutely did not. And that's the cool thing about this. And so I'm so glad that John could join us today and talk more about the famous story of the Golden Chest Mine.
How far back do you want me to go, Jeff?
Well, the beginning. Yeah, I mean, how you got into that?
Yeah, let's go back to, you know, now this, before you were a gold man, you started out trying to be a silver man, right?
Well, after Super Bowl IV, a couple of weeks after the game, I received a letter from an old timer in Lovelock, Nevada, by the name of Joe Beasley Jr. He thought we were related, and he wasn't, but I sent him an old picture of an autographed picture of me and said, nice to hear from another Beasley. And about a year later, I got another letter from him on the letterhead of Humboldt Silver Incorporated. And he wanted me to be the president of a silver mining company, pay me $60,000 a year, which I assured you was more than the Vikings were paying me then, and give me 1 million shares of stock and guarantee me to be a millionaire. So I flew to Reno, Nevada to meet the guy and took the job. Was looking for a public company, Shell, to finance his three silver mines. Ran across Golden Chest Inc., which was a 12G reporting company with the SEC, and I formed Vikings Investment Corporation. We took control of the company, and in the company was a lease on the Golden Chest Mine, and that's how it all began.
And the Golden Chest Mine, John, is in Idaho, correct?
Right, North Idaho.
North Idaho, and you had a number of your teammates and coaches at the time that went in with you on this, correct?
Right. We had approximately 13 players and a couple of coaches.
Okay.
What we did to get around some securities regs, back in those days you can only have so many non-sophisticated investors in the thing,
yep,
is we formed Vikings Investment Corporation. And the guys bought stock in Vikings Investment Corporation, and that corporation bought the significant block of stock in Golden Chest Inc.
Okay. Okay.
Now, are you still partners at all with any of these former players, or do they stay? Any of others stay involved beyond you?
You know, I have to say, Bob Lursum has always been there from day one. I haven't talked to Bob for a while, but he's always been a big backer and supporter of it. I talk from time to time to Joe and some of the guys, but not one guy or coach has sold one share of stock. They're still in it.
Oh.
And the project is still ongoing.
Yeah. Now let's go back. So you guys buy into Golden Chest in about what, 1972, 1973,
right?
And nothing comes of it for quite a period of time. It was what, 1989, where you had somebody go with another company that went out. You verified that there was gold there,
right?
Which confirmed your assumption.
What happened was basically the metal prices really went in the tank for a long time.
Right, yeah.
I was about 10 years out of the venture because I went in after I retired from the NFL. I went into the international oil business and moved overseas to London. And so the lease expired when I came back to the U.S. And in January of 1980, gold popped up to $800 an ounce. So I thought, well, I better give the owner of the gold mine a call to see if I can get another lease on it. The owner at the time was the world-famous five Oscar winning Johnny Green. Johnny agreed to lease the gold mine to me. Prices of metals kind of tanked a little bit again, but then we did another engineering report on it, and we discovered that there could be an open pit gold potential to the property. We brought in big Newmont Mining Corporation with the help of Jim Finks, by the way.
Okay.
They went up and put $1 million in the ground and drilled out an open pit resource of 250,000 ounces. Wasn't big enough for them because at the time they were the world's largest gold company. So they gave the project back to us and we continued to massage it along.
So that was about, if I recall right, that was about 1989 where Newmont got involved. And then you bought the mine in what, about 4 or 5 years later?
Right. I was able to personally acquire the mine in 1993.
Okay.
The leases were maintained, but I was able to personally put together the necessary funds to buy it from the Johnny Green estate.
And then another decade later is when you do the lease with what, New Jersey Mining Corporation?
Right. They took some of that original data. Newmont, in addition to their open pit, they had a deep drill hole that hit some really high-grade targets down there. We knew that high-grade was down there. We just didn't know how much. New Jersey Mining took that data and sunk a nice declining tunnel down to that drill intercept and started mining in 2005, and that represented actually the first actual mining out of that property since owned about 70 years.
Now, John, I got to ask you this question, and only because I've watched so many movies, including, you know, The Treasure of Sierra Madre and all these. How many times have you said, since you got involved with this, there's gold in them thar hills?
I have sent that a lot, Bob. I can tell you that.
And
you know what?
Is.
There is gold in them thar hills.
That's wonderful. This, you know, Jeff, you're right. This is a great story.
Yeah, well, and it even gets better. So you guys, so a couple years later, so 2011, you guys sell the mine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still getting payments for on the sale of that.
Right. We sold the mine under a contract for deed. So the buyers are still making quarterly payments. Their last payment will be in March of 2018. But in addition to the gold, we put into the project, well, the successor company to the Golden Chest Inc. Ended up being Meddling Contact Mines.
Right, yep.
And so in addition to the gold, we have 8,000 acres of zinc and germanium resources up in northeastern Washington State, which is under lease to the big Canadian company Teck Resources.
So you diversified.
Yep, we sure did. We actually added gold to the zinc because we thought gold would add a little pizzazz to the boring zinc.
Gotcha. So now let's go back. So because you and I talked about this off air earlier this week you were one of the triumvirate of Vikings back in those days that were Cal Berkeley grads, Joe and
yep.
Joe Capp and Ed White being the other two, mm-hmm. and you actually recruited Ed to Cal.
Right. Right.
And you were, and your degree was what? Agricultural economics, correct?
Agricultural economics and a minor in environmental design.
Okay. And you told me something pretty profound when we talked about you know, you see these guys today and how quickly, all the stories out there about how quickly they lose their money.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a background in mining when you went into this whole thing. But you guys have made some very shrewd business decisions. You mentioned to me that part of what you attribute this to is the fact that you guys didn't make a lot of money back in those days. You had to finish school, and you had to have off-season jobs.
Right.
And that in how valuable was, you know, a factor, do you think,
the
education?
Do you have to interrupt? What, like we talked about the other day, in those days we had to have at least 4 years of college before you can go into the league. Now, they could draft you as a future, like as a junior, but you still had to play out your senior year.
Okay.
So, I mean, you got to be an idiot if something didn't rub off in 4 years.
Right.
And Cal
is not exactly an easy school.
Right, you know, and so, I mean, it was tough. And so then, secondly, the off-season jobs for guys, you know, they look at things that they could do seasonally. You know, you look in sales and take advantage of their notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
So they would turn to real estate or insurance or become a stockbroker. But each one of those situations, they had to know the paperwork behind making a commercial decision.
You know, what I'd like to do is we're going to take a very quick break, and John is going to stay with us. And when we get back, I want to talk to you a little bit about, because we haven't really talked about the Vikings at all. I want to talk to you about those teams you were on, and also a little bit more about your former, schoolmate and teammate Joe Capp. But first, I wanted to say again, you're listening to the BSO presentation of Three and Out. Thank you to our sponsors. They include Bradshaw and Bryant, always seeking justice for the injured at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. Smart Start ignition interlock system. If you or someone you know is dealing with a DUI, go to smartstartmn.com and they will get you back on the road seamlessly. Also, the Relax in the Back store in Burnsville, where they can help you with your back and neck pain issues. Chanticleer Pizza, Solidarity Healthshare, and Bialke Law. Dealing with a work-related or workman's comp issue, get in touch with attorney Dave Bialke at BialkeLaw.com, B-I-A-L-K-E, law.com. And, of course, Dan Garrell from the Minnesota Bank & Trust Mortgage Team. Need a mortgage, refinancing, or if you just want to pre-qualify, give Dan a call, 952-841-9346, 952-841-9346. And where we're at it, John, let's give a plug to your company.
Middling Contact Mines.
I love this story. It's a wonderful one.
Middling Contact Mines, guys, goes back to 1928.
Wow. That's terrific.
Now, you had to see the corporate charter. It's like in hieroglyphics.
You're a privately held company, so people can or can they invest? Are you? It's not a traded company.
Yeah,
right?
We're very thinly public traded. I used to have it. I did the registration statements and had it registered with the SEC. But you know, ever since Sarbanes-Oxley and everything, the reporting requirements are so expensive for little junior companies like us that I deregistered it, and we just kind of trade in the new electronic pink sheets.
Okay,
so it's over the counter.
All right. Now, you 1967 is when you joined the Vikings, right? That was Bud's first year as coach.
Correct.
And probably, in my opinion, the best draft class the Vikings ever had, because you had what? You had Bobby Bryant, Gene Washington, and Alan Page coming in at the same time as you, correct?
And Clinton Jones.
Clinton Jones, yep.
Yeah. And Bobby Grimm.
Yep.
Remember Grimm? I think the story about Grimm is the only guy that Bud ever traded away and brought back.
Yeah, for him it would have been, yeah. Because Fran was traded by Van Brocklin and obviously came back.
Yep. Now, and we had Jimmy Hargrove and myself and Earl Denny, the running back out of Missouri.
And that was a hell of a draft class.
Yeah, it really was.
Now, what's your recollection of that first Super Bowl? Did you guys go in expecting to win because you were so dominant? You were the NFL champions.
And well, I have to give you a little hint. In the third quarter, I caught a crossing pattern and got my bell rung, and I don't remember much of the game. I went back into the game, but I don't know how the score got to what it was.
Yeah. Now, what was it about Bud that in a matter of a couple of years, I mean, that first year, I think you had three wins. The second year, I think you won the division, and then the next year, you went to the Super Bowl.
Well, you know, Bud's an amazing guy. You know, he doesn't say a lot. When he gives you his look, you get the look. But you combine them with the great veteran leaders that we had back in those days, and the Jim Marshalls and all of those guys, that we were pretty close. And the other thing is, there was no free agency back then, so you stayed with a club for as long as the club wanted you. So you really built, in addition to teammates, you built great friendships. You knew the families, the kids.
Yep.
So you were basically fighting for each other, you know.
And the guy that to me is amazing from that team is Joe Capp, because technically he was not, you know, he wasn't a great throwing quarterback. I mean, he had the 7-touchdown game, but there's something. Was it the leadership? What made him so successful, particularly in that 69 season? Because, I mean, there were guys that were so much better in terms of technique. And, you know, what made him stand as tall as he did that year?
Oh, he's a total winner. I mean, everything he did, he's a winner at, you know. And he brought that toughness to the team. I think one of the reasons they brought Jim at Thinks and Bud wanted him, because he brought a certain toughness that they wanted the Vikings to have that type of an image. And he certainly succeeded with that.
And he's
you know,
that.
I got to tell you an interesting story about Joe Capp. You guys might not know about it. But at Cal, he also was on the NCAA championship basketball
That's
team
right,
with,
yep.
with Pete Newell. And Joe is famous about saying that I fought Chamberlain in Madison Square Garden, because they had to beat the Chamberlain team in Kansas in Madison Square Garden before they went on. And Cal was losing the game. Chamberlain had 40-something points. Joe hadn't been in the game. And Pete Newell said, Joe, get in there and be aggressive. Well, you know, that's a license to kill for Joe Capp. Be aggressive. And Joe went in the game. There was a loose ball on the court. Chamberlain and Joe went on it. When after it started fighting each other, they threw them both out. Chamberlain 44 Chamberlain 44 points, Joe Capp 0 points, and Cal wins the game.
So that he was just the backup on the team who actually allowed him to win by fighting with Chamberlain.
Oh God,
wonderful story.
There's a lot of basketball stories about Joe Capp that have never come to light.
Now, how far apart were you two in college?
Quite a bit. My freshman year up there was 63, and Joe led the last Bears Rose Bowl team in 59.
Okay, because he was in Canada in the interim years.
Yep.
Well, I got to tell you, this has been terrific. John Beasley, former Viking, current gold mine owner. It's just it's terrific talking to you, and thank you for taking part in this BS Show presentation of Three and Out with attorney Jeff O'Brien and me, Bob Sansevier. Greatly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, and thanks for the interest in the project. The project's probably older than you guys are.
Well, maybe.
One of us, for sure.
Yeah, Jeff for sure.
Thanks, John.
All right, thanks a lot, John.
Tell my buddies hi over there for me.
We will.
All right, thanks again. Take care. And thanks again, like I said, to listening to this BS Show presentation of Three and Out. Jeff O'Brien and me, we're out.